Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
St. Louis is home for conservative talk.
You're listening to the Mark Reardon Show.
Speaking of Tim Sommer, our favorite music journalist, former record executive, and contributor to the Rock and Roll Globe website. How are you, Tim?
Oh, what a pleasure. And happy, happy Christmas to you and your family. And does poor Sue know she's lost her job to Alexa?
Well, hopefully not. Sue's going to be mad that she missed Alexa because they do have a good time together. And I thought, listen, she had off school today, so I thought we'd drag her in here.
What a pleasure listening to Alexa. And she's got good taste, and she's great radio skills.
I know. She used to be really, really shy. But let's talk a little music here as we take people into the weekend.
First of all, the songs you've been playing have been amazing. You just played Charlie Sexton. Now, Charlie Sexton, who I think is right now out on the road as Elvis Costello's guitar player, was Bob Dylan's guitar player for a long time. And if you've ever seen Charlie Sexton perform live, that is a treat.
It was not an accident that I picked that song for our segment because I have seen Charlie with Bob Dylan. I've seen Bob a couple of times, and he is an awesome guitarist. I didn't know he was out with Elvis. They just announced a new tour with Elvis, I think the Factory here in St. Louis, and it's a little different type of tour. He's going back, I think, to some more obscure songs, if I understood correctly. I don't know.
I did hear about that, yes.
Yeah. I saw Elvis several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, when it was here at the Pageant, a great venue, and it was just Elvis, not a band, and he was doing some storytelling. There was some video. I had no idea. His dad was a huge, huge star in the early 60s in England, in London.
That's right, yeah, a big band star, band leader.
Yeah, like for a variety show or something like that, too.
Yeah.
And boy, if you could have seen the video of, you know, his father and what Elvis looks like, man, no mistaking those two. So one of the questions that we had was, what are the biggest music stories of the year? I have some thoughts on that, and I know you have some thoughts on that. We can go over some of our stuff.
I'm going to throw three at you.
Okay.
And again, this is, we're talking personal opinion here. This is all, you know, I was going to say objective, but for the life of me, despite the fact that I write for a living, Mark, I always get objective and subjective mixed up.
I can empathize with that, yeah.
So let's just say it's my opinion. So I'm going to give you three stories. The first is Taylor Swift, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. We grew up, and I mean specifically you and I, Mark, we grew up in an era where we were made to believe that no one could ever possibly be as big or be as important to young people as the Beatles were to us. Yet here comes Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift turns an entire generation of young women, young girls, into music fans for life. She makes them listen to her music, and I mean listen, not just dispose of it, not just listen to 30 seconds on Spotify, but really study the music and be absorbed by the music. And she does the first $1 billion tour in history. So I think when you look at the biggest stories of the year, Taylor Swift and the fact that I think she really did the impossible. She finally came along and did something as big as the Beatles. So that's my number one.
And I think it's an appropriate number one. And I must say, I think because I pay a lot of attention to music outside of my children, I already have. Will I be lying if I would say that my daughter didn't have some influence there? Of course, because I've been exposed to more of the music. But I'm a fan. I really am. I like a lot of the music. I'm a fan of hers. I would stay outside of the political arena in most musical artists, including Mr. Springsteen. But I think she's fantastic as an entertainer, and I very much look forward to see how it evolves from here because she's got lots of you know, lots of opportunities, I think, in the future.
And as I said, I think one of the greatest things she does is she created a generation, a new generation of people who cared about records, who cared about music, who cared about lyrics, who followed, oh, this is what a bass player does, this is what a guitar player does, this is how songwriting develops. And that's just wonderful. And when it comes to Taylor Swift, that sort of leads me to what I think is one of the other major musical stories of 2024, which is, I think we finally learned that no one gives a holy damn who a musician supports politically. It's not going to change an election. It's not going to change votes. You can have Bruce Springsteen get on stage and say, vote for this person. You can have Taylor Swift get on stage and say, please, vote for this person. You know what? It doesn't make a difference. And for a long time, we all thought it would make a difference. Do you remember, Mark, how excited people were, how excited the Democrats were when Taylor Swift came out for Kamala? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people were predicting it would be a huge game changer, right? Bringing the legions of women, right.
And it just wasn't. And a part of that, there are probably a lot of reasons for that. I think a part of that is today the rock stars are MMA fighters. They're not the rock stars you and I grew up with. Today, the rock stars are those kind of personalities, the kind of personalities that Vince and Linda McMahon created. And I'm not putting that down, by the way. I'm just saying is that I think the Democrats had a very old school idea of what a rock star was, about who might sway opinions. I really thought, and I'm going to admit I was very naive about this, I really thought that Bruce Springsteen and Taylor Swift, not to mention all the other, you know, Hollywood celebrities, coming out for the Democrats would make a difference. Turned out it didn't. And I think that punctures a myth that we've held on to for a lifetime.
You know, one of the things that I would say about Springsteen, because I follow him so closely and I've seen him, you know, close to 50 times in concert, people can take this for what it's worth. He has, over the years, gone out, obviously, and endorsed candidates, done rallies, things like that. But in those 50 concerts that I've seen, maybe there were two times where I've heard him ever on stage talk specifically about party politics. You know, in other words, about a Democrat or Republican.
Right.
There was a concert in Milwaukee that's rather legendary in the E Street world from election night in 1988. But anyway, the bottom line is he doesn't do that in concert. Like, and I don't think Taylor Swift really does either. So
no,
you're able,
doesn't,
as a fan, to sort of separate that stuff. But I bring it up because it begs the question, why do it at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, for better or worse, and I tend to be someone, I'm a great fan of protest music. I'm a great fan of the classic protest singers like Bob Dylan and Pete Seeger and Phil Oakes. I'm a great fan of these people. But at the end of the day, I'm all for activism, and I'm not just talking about Democratic activism. I'm talking about whatever activism. I'm all for musicians taking a stance, but I think we can stop pretending that it's going to sway elections. Maybe it can alert people to union issues. And I think Bruce Springsteen's been very big on that stuff.
Yeah.
It can alert people to union issues. It can alert people to local issues. But in terms of swaying on a national election, I think 2024, it punctured that bubble.
Did you have one more story, or did you cover three stories?
Yes, I did. Yes,
okay.
I did. I wanted to say that Bob Dylan's, the fact that Bob Dylan is still out there playing the shows of his life, anyone who goes to see Bob Dylan is going to see the definition of a man with a rock and roll heart. Bob Dylan gets on stage, he plays for himself, he plays with the energy of an 18-year-old or a 16-year-old playing in their garage. He's a rock and roll heart, and he does it again and again and again. He's determined to die on that stage being true to the inner spirit of the god of rock and roll. And Bob Dylan's never-ending tour, which continued throughout 2024, I think that's, to me, one of the biggest stories of the year, is that he is still out there. And now, of course, we have the movie.
Yeah, the movie's coming out in a few days. A Complete Unknown with Timothy Chalamet. We have a St. Louis guy, Norbert Leo Butz, who is a friend who's also in that movie as Bob Dylan's mentor. I haven't seen it. I'm going to watch it this weekend. So I'll have a report on Monday afternoon before Christmas.
I I have a, I bought tickets for me and my family for Christmas Day. We're going to go see the movie. And I want to say this about the movie, and I think it's important. The movie was done very much with Bob Dylan's cooperation, and this is something you can never forget about Bob Dylan. He is a joker. He is a man obsessed, not obsessed, that's the wrong way to put it. He is a man who's created his own myth. The good thing about Bob Dylan is that when it comes to his own mythology, when it comes to telling his own story, he's not. You can't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. And I think that's going to be reflected in this movie. You may remember a few years ago, there was a terrific Martin Scorsese documentary done with Dylan about his touring in the 1970s. Do you remember that?
I do, but I never saw it.
It's a wonderful film, and it was all made up. The footage was real, the live footage, but the stories Bob Dylan told about the tour were entirely made up. Now, I expect that the movie, even though I've heard that it's very touching and very effective, is also going to be full of this gorgeous, almost Dada-like, if to use the word of the art movement, this Dada-like mythology where Bob Dylan just like loves to make up stuff about his own life.
That's interesting.
So I watch out for that in a good way.
Curious. All right, so let's you asked, we were talking earlier via text, and one of the suggestions was coming up with a couple of albums of the year, and I did that, so I'm gonna start on this, because there's
mine are going to be so obscure, everyone's going to be bored to death.
Yours are obscure. We pulled a little music, but mine are probably obscure as well, to a certain extent, but there's a band that I love, and I actually got to see them about a month ago, and their name is Coin, and they just put out a new record. This is what they sound like here. This is called Strawberry Jam. And they're basically a three-piece. I mean, they have more.
Is that spelled with a K or a C?
No, it's C. It's all capital letters, C-O-I-N. And I've been a fan of theirs for several years. And they've been around for, you know, probably a decade or more. But I saw them. Yeah, it's really good. Well, I play like the second half of this song, too. It's like a lot of harmonica. Just got a great sound to it. So that album, outside of this song, Strawberry Jam, really, really I loved. It was one of those records I could just put on. And then I'll kind of go in a little different direction for my second favorite here, and that's the Mavericks put out a new record this year. And I'm a big fan of the Mavericks, and this is one of the songs from that. I use this as a bump every once in a while. It's called Live Close. And really, really good sound here. I love Raul Malo so much.
I love you, baby.
Tim, have you ever seen the Mavericks in concert?
Yes, I have. Not for many years, but isn't that a beautiful example of the fact that artists, as they enter their 50s and enter their 60s, can still make powerful music? Artists aren't, it's not like the old days when artists would just get up there and play their oldies. Someone like the Mavericks can go into the studio and they can do something that has the heart and soul and energy and grit of the stuff they were doing in their 20s, and maybe even better than the stuff they were doing in their 20s.
I think
20s.
sometimes better. And I love the Mavericks because, and Sue and I talk about this a lot, they're really the type of band, like if I wanted to just take a random friend or someone that I wanted to really show them a great concert, a great live concert experience, they wouldn't even have to know the music. And I'd take them to a Mavericks show, and they would be blown away. They really would.
You have great taste. Seriously, that's a really, really good call.
So those are my two records there. What do you have for me that I've never heard of?
Speaking of artists who've been around for a long time yet are still at the top of their game, there is a phenomenal... One of my all-time favorite bands is an English band called Hawkwind. Hawkwind are a space rock band. In fact, they may be the inventor of space rock. It's been said that Hawkwind are the missing link between Pink Floyd and the Sex Pistols. And in England, they're kind of as big as the Grateful Dead, even though they don't sound anything like Grateful Dead. They're kind of a hippie cult band, but also the punk rockers love them too, and they've been around for 55 years, and they put out an album this year called Stories from Time and Space, which was just, it was their best album in 40 years, and just shows that they still got it, that they're still investigating, inventing, and making beautiful space rock. This album, for you or for the people listening to the show, imagine imagine a cross between Supertramp and Pink Floyd and the Cars or the Sex
Pistols. Wow. All right. You got my attention now. Yeah. I never heard of it. I do like the name of the band Hawkwind, though. I like that. All right. You had one other here that I pulled.
1969.
Nice. What about this one here? Ethan pulled this, so I don't know if this is one of the songs that's a hit.
This is from the other album.
Yeah, this is from the other album. You want to talk about this one?
Yeah. You know, it's a great gift to make music that is not ambient, but that is delicate, but draws you in, that is intense. Not music that just sits in the background, but quiet, strange music that really engages you. There is a European duo called Mars Smith, made up of a flautist named Daniela Mars and a pianist named Paul Smith, and they did an absolutely, absolutely exotic and beautiful album this year called Faroe Islands, Echoes on the Wind. And I know that sounds like it's going to be a floaty experience, but it's a really deep, intense experience to listen to the piano and the flutes just drift you off across the seas. And it's really one of my favorite albums of the year.
I like the sound of this. I'm going to put that in my cue and title, which is the music service that I use, and I'm quite curious about that. I also, you know, one of the other things I asked you is I've been playing...
That's a reminder that I have to really spend more time with Tidal.
I love Tidal. I think it's great.
One of the things I predict for 2025 is going to be the fall of Spotify, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, you sent me a piece. Let's do that, because I do want to follow up on that. I was going to tell you, so there's a great song. I was going to get your opinion on this. So there's... I'm doing Christmas music on Tuesday. They're allowing me to spin some Christmas tunes, and most of them are going to be artists that I either know personally or have some sort of connection to.
If there's anything like the bumpers you've been playing today, it's going to be a hell of a show.
Yeah, there's good, but some of the stuff that I play as bumpers has got a little bit more high energy. There's some of the songs I'll play on Tuesday that are a little bit more, a little slower, not maybe great bumper music, but there's an artist that came out right around 2000, and her name, early 2000s, her name is Lizzie West, and she wrote an original Christmas song called Family Christmas. I'll just a little sample here.
About three to shake the boxes by the tree. Wait as patiently as two or four or six.
Now, Tim, listening to her sing, this song's called Family Christmas. Do you think that that vocal sounds like any other singer that you're familiar with, just out of curiosity?
In all honesty, no.
Okay, let me play. So she did a song. Well, she did a record called Holy Road, and it was just a great record. It was on Warner Brothers. It was very, very, you know...
How long ago?
Like, early... I'm thinking 2001, 2002. But this was one of the songs, but listening to see if the lyric or the vocals sound familiar. So what happened was, is this album was fantastic, and I was told by Lizzie that at WXRT in Chicago, which is a legendary radio station,
sure
the guy said, we can't play this. It sounds too much like Natalie Merchant, which, I mean, how many bands sound like one another?
Very interesting.
But she does have kind of a Natalie Merchant sound. But I got to know her, and we became, you know, a little friends, and then she just vanished. I mean, I've never been able to find her since about 2007. The record is still up there. It's the only record that she ever put out. The song Family Christmas is still out on the streaming platforms. But, man, she just vanished. I even texted a couple weeks ago to see if she would answer and got nothing back, but it was just weird. And I guess you got artists like
shout
that.
Outs to, you're doing giving shout-outs to your listeners to see if anyone knows anything?
Well, she's not from around here, but every once in a while, you know, that does happen. Now, look, I just looked at the clock, so unfortunately I ran out of time to talk any more music. My goodness, this goes by very quickly. But I do want to follow up after the first of the year when Sue's back, and we'll talk about some of the Spotify stuff. But have a great
Fantastic.
Christmas. And by the way, I mentioned this. I didn't get to play it, but your band, Hugo Largo, from the 80s was mentioned on this list from the New York Times in the best box sets of the year, right?
I know. What a pleasure. I mean, that was an unexpected pleasure. We made two albums in 1988 and 1989, and they finally have been re-released 35 years later in a box set. And imagine my surprise to find that the New York Times put them on the list, put the box set for Hugo Largo on the list of the best box sets of the year. That was a great, yeah. great surprise.
Congratulations. Have a great holiday, Tim Summer. We will talk
you,
very soon
you
after
too,
the first of the year.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. If you were not aware, I and a couple of my buddies have a St. Louis Sports Talk podcast that we call The Lou Sports Talk. And joining us now to discuss some Blues hockey, because, you know, there is a little bit of a semi-important game coming up. The Winter Classic is going to be being played at Wrigley Field in Chicago, Illinois. Blues Blackhawks, one of the best rivalries in hockey, tomorrow at, I believe it's at 4 o'clock. Looking forward to that one, little New Year's Eve hockey. And joining me now is my good friend and the co-host of that podcast, Brandon Big Poppy Gallegos. Big Poppy, how we doing?
You know, Ethan, I've always wondered what your radio voice sounds like and how it would differ from podcasting. And I'm excited to say it sounds completely no different. You know, sounds exactly the same, and it's beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful, Ethan.
You're so sweet. You're too kind. Yeah, where exactly did the Big Poppy nickname even come from?
You know, well, I think old Brando used to have a few more LBs on him, so I think it was a natural fit. But, I also just think my voice is a little loud, my head's a little larger, you know, my personality just kind of fits the bill sometimes, so I think you kind of rolled with it. I also used to be a David Ortiz fan.
Okay.
How that happens along with being a Cardinals fan, I don't know, but I think it was a blend of those things.
Well, I tell you what, the Weight Watchers is doing you wonders, my friend.
Well, you know, it's the best kept secret.
Listen, we got a big game coming up here tomorrow night. Blues Blackhawks Winter Classic. I tell you what, this is the third one the Blues have been in since 2017 when we hosted that oh so glorious game at Busch Stadium and we kicked the Blackhawks butt. But I tell you what, there's something about these outdoor games. Oh, they're just fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, we're getting into this kind of culture in the NHL where outdoor games aren't as new. It's kind of, oh, we've seen it. You know, once you've seen a hockey game and a baseball field, you've kind of seen them all, right? And I beg to differ, Ethan. I think this game has all the storylines. It has Connor Bedard, who at the beginning of the year was, I mean, he was struggling, right? Some were saying, man, is this a sophomore slump? Is there an injury we don't know about? Sure enough, there was. And you look at a team that's also changed his head coach. I mean, St. Louis is very familiar with this. Luke Richardson, who started the year as the Blackhawks head coach, has now been recently let go. Anders Sorensen comes up from Rockford Ice Hogs. Incredible mascot, by the way. And so he's familiar with his team. Comes up just an I-55 North drive up to Chicago and steps in. And the Hawks have looked better. They're a long ways away. They're in the middle of a rebuild. You know, anybody who wants to question Army and say, why don't we just tear this thing down? Well, look at our friends up north. That's why we don't. They're still a few years away. But in regards to the game tomorrow, I mean, Connor Bedard's in the lineup. That's must-watch hockey. I mean, even if you're just a casual fan, you may not even know what you're watching. You'll respect greatness when you see him play. He just has that kind of swagger to him. He has that kind of skill. And from the Blues standpoint, I don't think I've ever talked about the Blackhawks that much in my life, Ethan. From the Blues standpoint, though, I mean, it's an exciting time to be a Blues fan. Monty's back in the house. You know, you're back. If you're a Blues fan, you're excited. There's momentum. You know, you come off a tough loss against Buffalo. You want to shake that one off. But, I mean, there's a ton of storylines going into this thing. Kyrou is playing to an elite level again. Thomas is our man. He is the main guy. So I think although the Winter Classic may not have the same buzz as the Sidney Crosby days in the snow in Buffalo, there are enough storylines to keep you intrigued.
Yeah, and I think part of that also being, you know, you connect the rivalry between the Cardinals and the Cubs, and you add on to it the Blues and the Blackhawks. These are two great sports cities that don't like each other, but it's not the same kind of hatred that you see with a, per se, L.A., San Francisco, a New York, Boston.
Sure.
It is a mature hatred in which there's also, I think, a certain level of respect that goes along with it. And I tell you what, that Winter Classic in 2017 was a lot of fun, and these two franchises are most definitely in different positions. As you mentioned, the Blackhawks rebuilding and the Blues, you know, quoting it as a retool. And I would say they are a step ahead of Chicago in that. But it doesn't take away from the history of not just the hockey rivalry here, but also just the city rivalry.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I was talking to you earlier off the air, and can you imagine if a Winter Classic like this existed in the Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire era of baseball?
Holy moly.
I mean, even look back when the Cubs, you know, were in their prime of the 2016 run. I mean, these two teams, these two cities have a history. And yes, maybe the hatred isn't there. You know, that requires a little bit more winning than what's been going on the past couple of seasons. But I tell you this, it matters to the players. Anybody who thinks it doesn't, it does. I mean, they were just talking to Patrick Maroon earlier today after the practice, and he was talking about having the experience of playing for both teams. He now currently plays for the Blackhawks, you know, and is a St. Louisan, is a Stanley Cup champion with the Blues, and he talked about how this rivalry, there's still a hatred there. You look across the bench and you see the other team, there is still a natural dislike for the other team, and that has a lot to do with the history of both cities, but also the history to do with both baseball franchises. I mean, the Cardinals and the Cubs, even in somewhat of the dog days of summer last year, those Cardinals-Cubs weekend rivalries, Busch Stadium was full. That was still an intriguing series. That was still nationally televised games. I mean, this is a rivalry people want to watch, and it's going to be on full display tomorrow.
Okay, we know we might be a little biased here, but you know, I think we'd both agree that sure. The Blues have some of the best jerseys in all of hockey. I think we'd both also agree that the Winter Classic merch and the jerseys that really all teams wear, but especially the Blues, just oh so good looking. I need to know your power rankings for the Blues' three Winter Classic jerseys.
Wow, what a question. I would say this. I think you have to go with the original Winter Classic jersey as number one. I mean, that's just hard to beat the. I mean, there are alternates now. We've kept them. We like them so much. It's got that classic 1967 look, that blue. I would love to see them go full time to there, but that might be a hot take, Ethan. I would have to say second would be our Minnesota Winter Classic. I like those. And here's the thing. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer about the uniforms now. Where's the blue note, Ethan? We need the blue note on the front of the chest. A blue note does not belong on the shoulder. It doesn't belong on the back of the jersey or anywhere else for that matter, right on the front, right on the crest. That would be my rankings. But again, I'm probably biased.
I'm clipping that right there because that is a piece of truth right there. I probably think maybe it's a little bit of bias for me because I was at the 2022 one. I'd probably put that jersey first, and then I would follow it with the 2017 one. But this is neither say or here or there. They're all great jerseys. Listen, as we continue moving forward here, I want to specifically look at the Blues prospect system because we talk about the Blues being in a retool right now, which puts them really a step ahead of some of these teams that are just totally tanking right now. The Blues aren't there. The Blues are in the mix, you know, we're talking about them perhaps sneaking into the playoffs. They were right there in the mix until the very end of last season. But at the same time, there is a lot of youngsters in this Blues system that have some potential to wreak some havoc potentially at the NHL level not very far from now. And we're seeing that, and we're seeing proof of that in the Junior World Championships, which are occurring right now. And last time I checked, what, 8 Blues prospects participating in that? And they've been pretty effective so far. What is there to be optimistic right now about this young system that can help get the Blues back to the level of hockey that they were just a few years ago?
You know, Ethan, that's a great question. But before we move on, I just got to ask, over or under, was it 3 coats you were wearing at that Minnesota Winter Classic?
Oh, 4? Way over. I think I was wearing 7 or 8. It was -30 with the wind chill.
That's what I thought. I just had to ask for the people. Yeah, you know, it's actually 9 players in the World Junior Championships. And here's the thing. I mean, yeah, we're not in a rebuild. We are not in a rebuild. But Doug Armstrong, general manager of the Blues, has done a great job at replenishing the prospect pool of the Blues. I mean, you look, we have the most players in the World Juniors. And if you're wondering what they are, it's a tournament where teams from across the world represent their country. They're right in that major junior age, somewhere around the 18, 20-year-old mark. And right now the Blues have the most players in it. You hear from assistant general manager Tim Taylor, he talks about out of that pool, maybe three or four players you hope make it to the NHL. I mean, Ethan, you hope all nine of them get in, sure, right? But to be realistic here, three or four players we're going to see on the Blues roster, and one of those being our first-round pick, Dvorsky. Dalibor Dvorsky, he has looked great for the Slovakian team. They had a big win yesterday, and he's been exactly what the Blues have looked at. But I tell you what has been a surprise of the tournament is a guy by the name of Jacob Stakel. He, for Team Czechia, he has absolutely looked outstanding. He's got 7 points in the tournament. He is tied for first in the tournament in points. He's a guy that isn't just looking to score goals. He's a two-way forward, which is rare at this age. I mean, in the time of the NHL where guys are faster than ever, the NHL is more looking to be offensive-driven than ever. Defense and goaltending obviously wins championships, but there's an offensive push in the league. It's exciting to see. It's exciting to see. And then, you know, the Alexander Steen effect. Alexander Steen comes in, and he drafts two Swedes in the first round last season with two of the first three first-round picks. And those guys have looked great. Those guys have looked absolutely phenomenal. And if you're the Blues, you're excited because, sure, besides Dvorsky, will you see these guys this season or next? No. But as you trend upward, as you look to turn around this retool, it's nothing but positivity that you're seeing come from this tournament. And not every franchise gets to experience this.
How far out do you think this team is really from being in the mix for a Stanley Cup run again?
The Army said this since day one. You look at Dalibor Dvorsky, right? You look at Jimmy Snuggerud, and these are guys that Snuggerud's playing for the University of Minnesota. He's gonna get into a Frozen Four with the skill on that team, and that's gonna go till April, right? He may play a game up in the NHL this season. You look at Dvorsky, he's tearing it up in the AHL. He's not a point a game per player down there yet. And so you probably think next year's a rookie season. You hope to maybe move some of these tougher contracts. Ethan, you talk about it all the time on the podcast. The Blues have, six players over the age of 30?
I think it's eight.
That's right, eight players over the age of 30 with contracts that you don't love, right? And so I think it's a mixture of both. I think it's going to be a mixture of developing these young guys to come up along with a movement in the off season of some contracts, and you still got to get professionals. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about this, but bringing in Cam Fowler shows the team and shows the city that Army is looking to not only win in the future, but win now.
Since the hiring of Jim Montgomery, and I should also mention that right now we're being joined by Brandon Gallegos, the co-host of the Loose Sports Talk podcast, talking a little bit of Blues hockey here before we wrap up here on the Mark Reardon Show. Right now, the Blues sit with a record of 17-17, as well as four overtime losses. They are 4 points out of a playoff spot. Seems like things are cooling off a little bit. You know, there was that red hot run right after they hired their new head coach, Jim Montgomery. Things have kind of cooled off a little bit back to that level of 500 hockey. But at the same time, you know, they have crept up a little bit. Like I said, only 4 points out of a playoff spot. How confident are you that this Blues team does find themselves in the playoffs here in 2024-2025?
Well, I'm confident. I'll say that. The goaltending, you know, Benner had a tough game against Buffalo, right? He let in a few. It's not many times that you get outshot you outshoot the other team by, what, almost 20 shots, and you lose by a couple goals, right? So you don't like to see that. But overall, the tandem between Hofer and Bennington is solid. And not every team in the NHL can say that, and not every playoff team in the NHL can say that. The Hurricanes, they have played tight defensively, but their goaltending has been something that scared them. And so you look at the team, can they get in? Absolutely. Can your goaltending steal a series? I do believe so. But here's what you're looking at. You're looking at a West that has a Vancouver Canucks team that has been reeling, but they're starting to find their game. You look at Dallas Stars find themselves in a wild card spot. The Minnesota Wild have been overperforming. You look at the eight teams right now, somebody's going to have to fall off here for the Blues to have a shot to get into a wild card spot. You look at a team like Utah. I think a team like Utah is overperforming, but they're a young team. They haven't been here before. A team like Calgary, I mean, their general manager has talked about selling at the deadline. So really, it looks like what are the top eight teams in the West? Who's going to fall, and can the Blues capitalize? And in order to capitalize, you got to beat teams that are below 500, which the Blues have struggled to do. But again, there's a lot of season left. We're just now turning the new year. And so to get in, they're going to have to beat teams they should in the new year, and they're going to have to see above-average goaltending, because really that's hockey, Ethan. It's your goalie against my goalie.
And really looking forward to seeing how things play out here in 2025 for the Blues. We're nearing the halfway point of the season, and yeah, excited to see where things go from here. Before I let you go, Brandon, I got to give you a quick congratulations to your Missouri Tigers. 10-win season, beating Iowa today, even though they had a backup quarterback playing against them. Still, some sort of honor and achievement there for Mizzou.
You know, that was the most Alabama compliment you've ever given to a Mizzou fan. You just had to slide in the backup quarterback. You couldn't let us just enjoy it, okay? As if we already weren't hurting enough by losing Burden and Cook today.
Hey, it's okay. Congratulations, 10 wins. That's something to be proud of. I would ask you what the usernames are on social media for our podcast, but you always forget it, so I'm not even going to ask you. It's at @LouSportsTalk_ on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to go follow the podcast there. Brandon, thanks so much for joining, Big Poppy. Appreciate it. Have a happy new year.
Ethan, this was super fun. Happy new year.
That was Brandon Big Poppy Gallegos, a co-host of the Lou Sports Talk podcast. Always enjoy getting to talk to my good friend Brandon. We come back and we wrap it up with our final interview of the day. Northern Illinois football broadcaster Andy Garcia joined Mark a few months ago after their huge upset of Notre Dame. We'll have that interview when we return. You're listening to the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Goes down to Northern Illinois.
He's lining it up. 5 seconds left. NIU up 16-14. 62-yarder. Snap, hold, Jeter's kick. It's blocked! It's blocked! It's blocked! Picked up by NIU!
Yes!
Picked up by NIU! The Huskies have done it! The Huskies with the biggest upset in NIU history! They come to South Bend, Indiana, and they knock off the number 5 team in the country. NIU 16. Notre Dame 14.
Oh my
gosh. The football gods were shining down on NIU.
And by the way, the football gods were shining down on Mizzou, because that actually helps my Tigers. We'll get to that in a second.
Oh,
that is Andy Garcia, who's on the call for the Huskies. He's on the horn with us this afternoon. Great call, Andy. I can't even imagine. I got chills just listening to the call. I can't imagine how much fun it was on Saturday afternoon.
Listen, how many times can Coldplay leave me in, man? This is great.
We did that for you. But look, you got to set this up for people who weren't watching. So I'm at the tailgate in Columbia before the Mizzou game, and we have at our tailgate, you know, a TV, and we have four games on. We're watching that one, and all of a sudden it looks like Notre Dame, one of the top-ranked teams in the country, might go down to who? Northern Illinois, right?
Yeah. No, it really started early in the game. They went down. Notre Dame went down first drive. It looked they were going to, you know, dominate. 7-0, first drive to go down, all right? Then they kicked us, and NIU gets the ball. The ball bounces. We try to fair catch it. You know how they do it now? And
it bounced
and came back into play. So we start the first drive at the 2-yard line. We're like, oh, boy, it's going to be one of those games. And then we get able to get a long 83-yard touchdown reception to one of our running backs, Antonio Brown, in 7-7. We get a couple field goals. We get some stops. The momentum turns right after that first drive, Mark. It really was NIU who was – the better team. I'll be honest. It really was, and I used the better team. So by halftime, I'm starting to think, okay, this could happen.
Yeah.
We're right in it. You had to get through the first quarter. And then when we start the fourth, you just feel like, man, this is going our way, and we got an interception late in that fourth quarter, 5 minutes left. We're able to get it down, kick the field goal. Wasn't a lot of time left. I'd had some calls in my mind. I wanted to work around touchdown Jesus. You know, I didn't want to, you know, offend anybody, right? You got to be careful. So I went with what I had written down very early with the football gods, and it worked. And, man, it was so much fun. It was a great weekend. I hope we enjoyed our stay in South Bend, because they're never going to have us back.
Well, I mean, they probably won't. Done. You know, usually, here's what's interesting about these games. Sue, you were asking about this last week, because Sue doesn't follow this stuff as closely as I do, and maybe some other people. But, Andy, what happens is typically these schools go into big programs like Northern Illinois, and, you know, they prepare for the season, but they get their asses kicked, but they take the check, right?
Correct, yeah. Correct. No, you want, this is how we survive, right? As a mid-major, right?
Exactly.
We need these types of games, and it was 1.4. I mean, that is correct, and we need these types of games. We go to NC State in a couple weeks after this, right? So we need these types of games, not just to go take on some bigger names. We need the money. Right. It's
right.
Part of what NIU
Absolutely.
Needs for a budget. So, yeah, not only do you get paid, but you and we've beaten some teams. Like we've taken on Alabama early in the 2000s. We won. You know, we beat Northwestern. You know, we beat Boston College last year, Georgia Tech a couple years ago. So we have some what we call boneyard wins.
Sure.
But this one takes the cake, because not only do you get paid, but you also get a big win. And I mean, it's been huge. I mean, our head coach, Thomas Hammack, is such a great guy, and you've seen it around. Like, he's just true. That's him. He cries, right?
Oh, I love it. I love it. No, I saw him after the game. But talk about this kid who hit the field goal. The block was one thing. I mean, let's face it, 62 yards, might not have gone, probably wouldn't anyway. But was it Cannon or is it Kanan Woodhill that hit the 35?
It's Kanan Woodhill, yeah.
So, I heard him on ESPN yesterday. They had him on, and they had him doing the NFL picks, and he sounded like he was having the time of his life. It was awesome.
He was great. And what's nice about our team, we have 32 seniors. And you don't get a lot of that in college football, right? You get the NIL. You get these guys that go, and they go to one team and then go to another. We have a team that's really family. We didn't have a lot of people come in or out. So these guys have been around the program for a while, and Cannon's a great guy. Like, he's been around, and, man, was he clutch against Notre Dame, making that long field goal to give us a lead. He made a couple others. But Cannon's like a lot of the other guys. They're all good kids, Mark. They're, like, all good kids. You can go up to them, talk to them. They're great. Like, no egos. And I think that's what was great about what happened on Saturday. It's like, it just shows how cool in the family atmosphere that NIU was. It was fantastic.
I don't know if other people do this, but honest to God, when that happened and when I absorbed it, outside of the fact that I was selfish and I think it's good for Mizzou, I thought to myself, these kids must be having the time of their lifetime.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think the Notre Dame kids were, but those Huskies, just to have that experience with one of the biggest upsets of the decade, let's face it, right?
Well, in a long time, yeah, because you hear like Northern Illinois, right? I think some people called us Southern Illinois. I think some people said that we were in the FCS Division II, right? It's not like that. Like, we've gotten some wins, but anytime you can go on and take on a traditional powerhouse too, like Notre Dame, it doesn't get any bigger.
Get more at 971talk.com.